Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Buck Sexton Show. On this episode, very special episode for you, we have the authors of a new book, Kabul, The Untold Story of Biden's Fiasco and the American Warriors Who Fought to the End. Joining us are Jerry Dunleavy. He is working on the Afghan Withdrawal Committee for the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He's speaking today in his capacity as an author of the book. And James Hassan, former Army officer, served in Afghanistan, and an attorney and a writer. Gentlemen, honored to have you both here. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's great to be here, Buck. Thanks for having us, Buck.
So, James, let's start with you. What do you want everyone to know about? Actually, let's start with this. What happened? Because I'm sure that's what the book's about. What happened in Kabul? Tell me about this withdrawal.
Yeah. It was nothing short of a horror show, really. And you could start a few months before the withdrawal in terms of all of the mistakes that the Biden administration made. But to cut to the chase, the 2 weeks of the evacuation itself were just the American people and American soldiers and warriors at their best, and the American government at its absolute worst. And these guys were working 18, 20 hours a day. Some of them didn't sleep for 72 hours. They watched babies get trampled, people get killed. They were exposed at all times to what inevitably ended up being the suicide attack that occurred on the 26th. And they knew that. And they continued to try and rescue Americans and rescue our allies at the same time. And throughout it all, they weren't just battling with the crowds. They weren't just scanning for threats. They were trying to overcome the Biden administration's just toxic combination of ignorance and self-assurance that hindered everything at every step along the way.
You know, Jerry, I was in Afghanistan over a decade ago, we were there, U.S. military, U.S. forces of different kinds were there for 20 years. And then at the end, it felt like someone just turned the lights off and everyone was just made a run for it. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously a 20-year war, more than 2,400 Americans killed throughout the war, and mistakes made for 20 years, to be sure. There's no doubt about that. But this decision, what Joe Biden decided to do, a swift and immediate military withdrawal, retrograde, and closing Bagram, which was our strategic base in Afghanistan, and forcing us to have just a tiny, tiny troop presence in Kabul to keep an embassy and an airport running, doing all of that, cutting the, you know, what was a very shaky Afghan military, of course, cutting them off completely from U.S. Troop support, advisors, logistics, supplies, intelligence, air support, all things that the Afghan military was completely built around and designed to function on. Doing all of those things, ignoring the, you know, the growing strength of the Taliban, deciding to do all of this withdrawal in the middle of the Afghan fighting season, a fighting season that we have known about for 20 years and fought in for 20 years, and picking September 11th, the 20th anniversary, basically just a bizarre date to pick, but a date that he picked because he wanted to. It wasn't a strategic reason to do this. Doing all of these things without figuring out, how are we going to get Americans out? How are we going to get our Afghan allies out? The tens of thousands of Afghan allies that worked as interpreters and worked alongside our troops for 20 years, people that we made promises to. Doing all of this stuff without coming up with a plan about how are we going to save Americans if this all goes south? How are we going to get our Afghan allies out if this all goes south? And of course, very predictably, we would say, I mean, James and I were talking as all of this was happening, saying, Taliban's going to take over this year. I mean, it's happening. It's happening quick. And of course, all of these bad decisions lead to a rapid Taliban takeover. Americans left behind enemy lines, Afghan allies stranded all over the country, the U.S. having to rely on the Taliban to provide security outside of the airport. And we see how well that worked out with the suicide attack by ISIS-K that killed 13 Americans, killed close to 200 Afghans. And I don't want people to forget this. Outside of the 13 Americans who were killed, you know, we had 45 Americans wounded as well. Tyler Vargas Andrews lost an arm and a leg. There was a female Marine who is currently paralyzed because of this. So these are real costs. And then, of course, the cost to America's standing around the world. So, you know, that's what this book is about. And I think that we just lay it out like an indictment. It's airtight beyond any doubt at all that this was a disaster and that this was Joe Biden. He might not be in control of everything in his White House, but this was his decision.
But if you allow me, I'd like to piggyback off that just a little bit.
Sure.
To Jerry's point, this wasn't the case where nobody saw it coming. They were warned repeatedly that this would happen. And in fact, they still refused. The State Department refused to draw down the embassy to warn Americans to get out, to take any kind of precautions like destroying sensitive documents, which included the identities of all of the Afghan allies that we had. There's been a lot of talk about the descent cable that a few people from the embassy sent, from the embassy in Kabul sent to the State Department in DC saying, the Taliban is going to take over and the embassy is going to be overrun. And that was in July of 2021. But that was, that followed a whole ton of other intelligence reporting. And the interesting thing is that the two officials that took the lead in that descent cable, those were Obama administration National Security Council alums. They, but they were completely ignored. And so while we had only 1,000 troops there, we had 2,400 diplomats, and we had 10,000 Americans. And it just completely devolved into the exact situation that anyone who's been there and any military professional predicted.
Now, there were efforts that, if memory serves, that were made even among people privately, outside of official government channels, to try to help evacuate some of our personnel across the spectrum. What can you tell us about that?
I can tell you a lot about it, in part because I had a small role in taking part in those efforts when that was happening, just among fellow vets, but then also from talking to all of the different groups that were involved. And to give you an example of the state of play, in August 2021, the Chief of Staff for Special Operations Command Central, an Army Green Beret colonel, was texting veterans groups, disparate ad hoc groups, asking for help getting guys out because our special forces were overwhelmed trying to save as many Americans as they could, and they still didn't get all of them. Those efforts were, they saved a whole lot of lives and rescued a lot of souls that would have been in an awful circumstances, tortured and killed by the Taliban if they hadn't done that. But they also continued after that. And I think that's one part we talk about, the Biden administration getting in the way over and over. I'll let Jerry jump in here in a second. But the Biden administration loves to claim that they rescued the interpreter who helped save Joe Biden in 2007 when his helicopter was forced down in Afghanistan in a snowstorm. He was abandoned. He wrote a Wall Street Journal article under a pseudonym, and he later got out in November of 2021. They didn't have anything to do with that. Those are private veterans networks, intelligence community, former intelligence community officials. They claimed credit for it. They didn't have anything to do with it. And in fact, they disrupted the organization to such an extent that they placed the lives of the American volunteers and everyone else at various safe houses in danger. And I'll let Jerry jump in and provide some of the specifics on that.
Yeah. So, yeah, Joe Biden's interpreter was one of the tens of thousands of Afghan allies who was left behind. And he got out through the efforts of these networks of private individuals, a lot of them veterans, some of them not. And this interpreter made it out
with his family,
only because of the efforts of these private groups. And then, like James said, the Biden administration, claimed credit for getting him from Pakistan to the United States, but it was these private groups that got him out of Afghanistan. And the Biden administration's effort, some of the people involved in getting this Biden interpreter out would say the State Department's interference, put their broader mission at risk and put the safe houses that they had set up for other Afghan allies at risk as well. And the bigger point here, why these private groups, why these veteran groups, why they had to do what they did, why they were springing up after the Taliban took Kabul and helping get Americans out and helping get Afghan special forces out and helping get Afghan interpreters out. The reason why this had to happen is because the Biden administration did no planning for this scenario whatsoever. The State Department had no ability to get these people out. We were completely overwhelmed at the airport, and we were completely at the mercy of the Taliban, who we had been fighting until 5 seconds before, and actually got into some fights at the airport with as well, which is something we can talk about a little bit more.
Which has never been reported yet.
But all of this happened. These veteran groups had to spring up and spring into action because the State Department was MIA and the Biden administration was MIA. And if these groups hadn't sprung up, if private Americans, some of them flying to Afghanistan and working on the ground, some of them working, you know, 24/7 at their dinner tables.
And emptying their 401ks to pay for it.
And emptying their 401ks to pay for it, to get flights, to get people out. If these private groups hadn't sprung up, there would have been a lot more Americans and a lot more Afghan allies left behind.
A word from our sponsor here, Tunnel to Towers. Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. The foundation honors fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free homes. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. Through the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute, the foundation is educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. Tell me about this. You mentioned it. Tell me about the fights with the Taliban at the airport.
Yeah, so we, as part of this, we spoke to hundreds of individuals over the course of a year and a half. And they range from, you know, the private first class manning the gates, manning the wall, to individuals like the chief of staff for Special Operations Command that I just mentioned, Colonel Seth Kermeridge. And in the course of all of that, we have learned a lot of things that the administration absolutely did not want to acknowledge. And as a preface to what I'm about to tell you, the administration's line over and over, you'd see, you know, Kirby, you'd see, you know,
Saki,
Secretary of Defense Austin, all of them, they would say, well, we're partnering with the Taliban and they've been businesslike and professional and they're helping us with this evacuation. Mm-hmm. And they had to do that because, well, there was almost no other choice because we were surrounded on a few square miles of airfield. But the fact of the matter is that the Taliban wasn't businesslike and professional at all. When they got wind that that the administration was considering extending past August 30th, because they knew that if they didn't, they would leave Americans behind. The Taliban told them in no uncertain terms that they'd attack the airfield, and the administration bent the knee. But what happened on August 27th, which was the day after the bombing, which is the anecdote that I referenced, was a squad size element of Taliban fighters cut the wire at Ichkaya and climbed over the gates and were armed and ended up being confronted by paratroopers in the 82nd Airborne Division who raced to kind of cover that area at once they were moving in, and they exchanged. There was a firefight. That was never reported. And we spoke to almost every single member of that squad. What was that Taliban
element trying to accomplish? Just
I think
some Americans?
Basically it was kind of I think the easiest way to explain that is just through the soldiers' words themselves. And we asked them that question, and they said was basically they felt that it was kind of a probing operation to see what our security was at the very end as we were drawing down, putting people on planes, getting out. They're only, you know, our footprint was getting smaller and the ability to defend Americans was kind of getting weaker, and they were trying to figure out what those points were.
Jerry's going to say, what do we know about who was left behind and is perhaps still left behind?
Yeah. So, there were many hundreds of Americans left behind. The confirmed numbers range well over 1,000 and probably into the thousands of Americans who were who were left behind in Afghanistan. Obviously, tens of thousands of Afghan allies left behind as well. There are still Americans who are stuck in Afghanistan. There are a number of Americans held hostage by the Taliban as we speak as well. Something that the Biden administration doesn't like to talk about very much, but there are Americans currently being held hostage by the Taliban. And all of this goes back to, I think, the reliance that we had on the Taliban and that the U.S. still has on the Taliban because of the leverage that they have over Americans being held hostage, the leverage that they have over the Afghan allies being left behind. And to go back to this businesslike and professional mantra that the Biden administration had about the Taliban, you know, we talked to service members who were there on the ground at HKIA who talked about how the Taliban was beating people. The Taliban was executing Afghans in front of them, in plain sight. The Taliban was turning Americans away from the gate and would beat Americans as well. Through all of this, these service members were not given the authority to deal with these Taliban threats, to stop the Taliban from beating up Americans and from beating up and killing the Afghan allies who are trying to escape. So, you know, an issue that gets brought up a lot by the people we talk to is this one of like moral injury. And a lot of the service members there feel that because they had to witness things that no person should ever have to witness. And the things that they saw the Taliban doing to people, you know, it's horrific to hear, and I can't even imagine what it was like to see.
Yeah. And to add one more, you know, kind of small anecdote about Americans left behind. You know, we talked to a number of those folks, and one story I can tell you is that there was a family of American citizens who were living in Kabul. The dad worked for the World Bank, and there were there was no guidance, there was no help from the State Department, from the American government to help them get out. And they ended up contacting a administration official who we spoke with, who did it in his private capacity because he asked the State Department for help and they weren't able to do it. And the way that that played out was the family informed him that they were going to make a 7-hour drive from Kabul to the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, and that they supposedly there would be World Bank representatives waiting for them, but they asked for American diplomatic assistance on the other side of the border. They showed up. For whatever reason, the World Bank folks weren't there, but there was nobody from the embassy, and their 8-year-old son had to watch the Taliban absolutely beating the crap out of a bunch of people who were also trying to escape right in front of them. And they had to go back to Kabul. And they ended up getting out, you know, a few weeks later on a second attempt. But again, not because the State Department was there to greet them, because the World Bank helped rescue Americans when the United States government abdicated its duty.
As we talk now, gentlemen, what is the state of play in Afghanistan? Taliban is in charge. So after 20 years of war, Taliban is now the government, whether we recognize it or not, official or not, they are the government of Afghanistan, right? Are we going to get the people who have been left behind out? Is there any effort by the Biden administration to get them out?
Yeah, well, when it comes to the state of play in Afghanistan right now, obviously the Taliban is back in charge. And when you look at who is in charge in the Taliban, and this is true, it's pretty much the same people as who were in charge in Afghanistan and the Taliban on 9/11, either the same people or their sons. And so it's a pretty tragic situation. And one thing to note about the current Taliban government is that, you know, Joe Biden in his withdrawal speech when he announced in April 2021, he tried to claim that Al-Qaeda was gone from Afghanistan. And he's claimed that throughout 2021. He's claimed it, you know, earlier this year, that Al-Qaeda is gone.
Even a few weeks ago.
There are members, top members of the Taliban government, their deputy intelligence director, the governor of Kabul province, who are dual-hatted members of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. So it's not just that Al-Qaeda is still in Afghanistan and that the Taliban is still allied with Al-Qaeda. There are dual-hatted members of Al-Qaeda in the Taliban government. And of course, you had Ayman al-Zawahiri show up in Kabul and living in the safe house of Sirajuddin Haqqani, one of the top members of the Taliban, last year. So, you know, this is a pretty dire situation when it comes to who's in charge in Afghanistan. And the Biden administration is just lying through its teeth about it.
Take your energy and multiply it by two. That's how good and healthy and energy-filled you're likely to feel when you subscribe to Chalk's Male Vitality Stack. This is an all-natural set of supplements designed for everyday consumption and meant to provide you with the stamina, focus, and energy to be your very best. Chalk's been at this for some time, making best-in-class supplements with a focus on allowing you to live your fullest days. Unlike a lot of supplement companies, they don't try to put them into retail stores, but instead build a direct relationship with you as you become a customer of theirs. They want to know about your experience and what else might help you. Start online today at Chalk.com. Whether it's their Male Vitality Stack product or their line of products for both men and women, you'll like the way you feel. Chalk.com, that's C-H-O-Q.com. Save 35% off any Chalk subscription for life when you use my name, Buck, at checkout. Chalk, C-H-O-Q.com, and use my name, Buck, for 35% off. All right, gentlemen, I just want to remind everyone that the book is Kabul, the untold story of Biden's fiasco and the American warriors who fought to the end. I'm speaking to the two authors, Jerry Dunleavy and James Hassan, right now about this. And I'll just give you, either of you or both of you, the last word. Do you think that there will be any accountability for this disaster when it comes to the Biden administration, the top of the military apparatus? What do you think?
Well, that's why we wrote the book, to do that and to tell the stories of everyone who was there and to remember and honor the legacies of the 13 Americans who were killed at Kabul Airfield. And what I can promise you is that we kind of scratched the surface here today, but there is a whole lot coming that, whether the American public holds them accountable is a different question, but that will be in the public record for all history. And that's a form of accountability in itself. I'll let the congressional investigator over here say his piece.
You know, what I would say on the accountability front, and I'll leave the audience with sort of one big thing that we uncovered. But when it comes to accountability, part of it is going to be telling the full story about what happened there. And in the course of our investigation, we found Pentagon documents and records showing that the United States was tracking and surveilling ISIS-K cells in Afghanistan post and takeover and pre the bombing of Abbey Gate. And these Pentagon records show that the U.S. military asked the Taliban to raid what the U.S. believed was a known location of ISIS-K close to the airport.
Of the suicide bomber.
And the Taliban declined to do so. And we also found Pentagon records showing that the U.S. was tracking these ISIS-K cells, we believe likely in Nangarhar and in Kabul, and that strike authority was requested by the lower rungs of the U.S. military to conduct strikes against ISIS-K before the Abbey Gate bombing. And those requests were denied because of how the Taliban might react. And so there's a lot more to unearth and explore there. But that is something new and fairly shocking that we found. And combined with the testimony from Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews, the Marine sniper, who testified to Congress, to the committee I work for, that he had been given, he and the Marines had been given a description of the ISIS-K bomber before the bombing, and believe that they had spotted the bomber in the crowd. And when they asked for permission to take the bomber out, that permission was denied because their higher up didn't have that authority himself, and never got back to them about who had that authority or who could give it to them. The bomber disappeared into the crowd and conducted his attack shortly after that.
And to this day, the administration has never named the bomber, and they always claim that they weren't tracking anyone in particular, or they weren't aware of the threat that he posed. And that's just completely incorrect for two reasons, or I could show that's completely false for two reasons. One, we identified who the bomber was, and we took his picture to some of the Marines on the ground, and they said that he was in there. They had received the same picture of that individual to look out for. So it combined with everything else we just told you, it cannot be the case that the administration had no idea this person was a threat and was not tracking him, and also that the picture was distributed to military service members on the ground to keep an eye out for him because he might be conducting a bombing.
Gentlemen, it's a very important story. I appreciate you taking the time to, of course, write the book and then to come on here and tell everybody about it. Kabul, the untold story of Biden's fiasco and the American warriors who fought to the end. James and Jerry, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, Buck.
Thanks, Buck. Appreciate it.
Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has supported our nation's heroes and their families ever since. Heroes like Marine Corps Sergeant Adam Mayo. He served our nation for over 7 years before he was severely injured during training. He was left paralyzed from the chest down, severely limiting his ability to move around his home independently. Tunnel to Towers paid Sergeant Mayo's mortgage, removing a financial burden for him and his family. The foundation gave him a specially adapted smart home designed for his specific needs. Tunnel to Towers helps severely injured service members and first responders, as well as Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders. It has already come to the aid of so many heroes and their families by providing mortgage-free homes. The foundation is also committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T2T.org.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.